your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
It's time to talk some football. Welcome to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report with former Buffalo Bill Jeff Nixon. Get ready to participate in an intelligent discussion about the Buffalo Bills and the NFL in general. Now, here's your host, Jeff Nixon.
Hey, welcome to the show. This is Jeff Nixon, and my guest today is Steve Christie. Steve played for the Bills from 1992 to 2000. And in his 15 NFL seasons, Steve converted on 336 of 431 field goals for a 77% accuracy rate. And he also connected on 468 of 473 extra points, which is a 98% accuracy rate. And that gave him a total of 1,476 points. Boy, Steve, I had 6 points when I played for the Bills. Steve also had 9 game-winning field goals in overtime, an NFL record he shares with former NFL place kicker Jim Breach. In Super Bowl 28, Steve set a Super Bowl record by kicking a 54-yard field goal. It is currently the longest field goal ever made in Super Bowl history. He was also a key contributor in the Bills' comeback win against the Houston Oilers, which occurred after the Bills trailed 35-3 early in the third quarter in a playoff game after the 1992 season. Steve also kicked a successful onside kick in that game, which he recovered himself, and he also kicked the game-winning 32-yard field goal in overtime. On March 5, 2008, Steve Christie retired, and the Buffalo Bills officially signed him to a one-day contract, allowing him to retire as a Buffalo Bill. He currently resides in Florida. Hey, Steve, it's good to have you on the show.
Hey, great to be here.
Yeah, so, you know, I was reading all of your statistics, and the one that really caught my eye, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but are you still the holder of the longest field goal in Super Bowl history, 54 yards?
Yeah, and that was kind of a funny story because, you know, you always hear things after the fact, but I can still remember Marv saying one thing and then Mr. Wilson saying another sort of afterwards, where Ralph said, yeah, sure, let's go hit it. And then, you know, I heard after that Ralph's reaction was, well, I don't know how far that is. What are they doing?
And then, where was Ralph? You know, coming in on this, was he?
Well, just after the fact, after the game, you know, he wasn't too sure how far it was, and I wasn't exactly sure. I think Marv knew it was pretty far, and he felt that if we did make it, it would give us a bit of a push, a little bit of a lift. But I didn't realize how far it was until I got out there, and I thought, oh, geez, I'm going to have to hit this perfectly, you know, to even have a chance. But luckily enough, we made it.
Yeah. Is that your longest field goal, or did you have one longer than that?
I had a 59 against Miami at home, but that was at the half, and we ended up losing that one anyway. That was early in the 90s there.
That doesn't matter. That was a long field goal. That's only like, what, 3 or 4 yards short of the all-time record, isn't it? I mean, what's the longest field goal ever kicked?
Was 63. Like,
yeah, so, I mean, that's just it's right there. And you probably could have done that at some point, you know, but you know, sometimes the opportunity just doesn't come to do it. You know, typically that happens at the very end of a game,
right?
You know, so. But
or
anyway,
Denver.
So let's talk a little bit about. You grew up. I don't think a lot of people know this, but you grew up in Ontario, Canada, and what? But you ended up graduating and going to the College of William and Mary. What? How did you get recruited by them?
Well, I was a soccer player, and I was with the Canadian junior team at the time as a center back, and really was looking at the age of 17 and 18 there, looking at my options. And at the time, and even to some extent, albeit there's Major League Soccer in North America for us, but at the time there really wasn't a great opportunity to play soccer in North America. And whatever opportunity that I had or decided not to take was in Europe. So football was really going to be the way to go for me. And just basically I made the conversion of kicking a soccer ball to kicking a football in high school growing up in Oakville. And just worked really hard at teaching myself how to punt as well. And it sort of paid off into getting me a scholarship down to William & Mary.
Yeah, let me ask you a question though. How did you play did you kick in any of the Canadian, high school teams that you played for, or was it just soccer?
I played 2 years of high school football. My first year, my junior year, I was just a place kicker, and then my senior year I did both, and then at William & Mary I ended up doing both. And
okay, so they knew that you could kick, obviously. Now, did you get drafted by the Bills? I didn't see that on here or anything.
Oh, no. I was after William & Mary, I've signed a free agent contract with Tampa Bay.
You played 2 years with Tampa Bay, right?
Yeah. Those were years where we went 6-10, and they fired Ray Perkins, the head coach, about three-quarters of the way through the season. And then following the second year I was there, which was we were 3-13, they fired Richard Williamson and brought in another head coach. And I said, now, wait a minute. We're talking three head coaches in 3 years. The Bucks decided to put me on the Plan B free agent list, and they were kind of fooling around with that and, trying to make deals. And Bill Polian and Marv Levy called me, and I said, I'll be on the next plane. See ya.
Wow.
I'm not staying down here for that. It was just it was a nightmare until Dungy got here.
Yeah, I was reading here, you made all 27 extra point attempts, and you made 23 of 27 field goals in your rookie season. So, that must have impressed some people around the NFL when they saw that. So, I'm glad the Bills got you. I can tell you that right now.
Me too.
Yeah, I know. So, this everybody will always remember the greatest comeback in the history of the NFL, our win against Houston Oilers. We were trailing 35-3, and there you had a couple really great things that occurred in there. First, you recovered an onside kick, which I think that was they mentioned that was the first time any place kicker had ever done that in a playoff game, where you kick it and then you actually recover yourself. So I don't know if you knew that or not.
I had heard that, but I'll tell you right now, it was Mark Maddox and Mark Pike who made that happen. Those are my fives, the guys on each side of me, on either side of me, that actually were just a little bit of ahead of the ball, because when you make that middle onside kick, it's a bit of a dribbler.
Well, you got to have some people knocked down.
Yeah, those guys went right up there. They did the business, and it was really, nothing's easy, but for what they did, they gave me a bit of a pocket to get into so I could, so I had access to the ball, and we were fortunate enough to get that. We certainly needed something at that point.
Yeah, and I tell you what, that really helped him quite a bit in that game. But you went on to kick the winning field goal in that game, and how did that feel? To accomplish that. Did you guys know? Let me ask you this question too. Did you know at the time, that you were getting ready to kick that it could be a possible record for the greatest comeback in the history of the NFL? Did you know that at the time?
No, I had no idea. And in fact, I just. When we lined up for it, I just kind of got myself on the field and knew that it was low 30s, somewhere 30-something yards, and I just, like I usually do, just hit it like I would in practice, and I didn't realize it until after the game that the net wasn't even up. So the ball just kept going. I saw it went through. It kept going.
Yeah.
And then a funny thing happened on Monday. It was either Hojo or Woody in the equipment room came up to me and said, yeah, somebody has your football. I said, well, what football? I kept the ball that I recovered, because you never know.
You never know
if it's going to make it or not. But anyway, I guess somebody had caught the football that went through the uprights. And I thought, well, that would be a great thing to have. And I don't know who this was, but they wanted $10,000 for it. I said, well, this is my first. That was my first playoff game. I'm kind of hoping I might get another one or two somewhere along the way. As long as I'm in Buffalo, I got a good chance of that. So I declined on the offer.
So you never got a chance to get that ball. They
I don't know who has it, but I wasn't going to play that game.
If you go on eBay one of these days, you'll probably see it, trying to be sold on there. Maybe you can get a better deal for it.
That's right.
That reminds me of a story. When I played for the Bills, we had beaten the Miami Dolphins for the first time in 10 years, and I had three interceptions in the game. And after the game, you get undressed, put your stuff in the locker room, and you leave. Well, the next day I come back, and my jersey is gone, at the time, I didn't think nothing of it, you know. But I just was a little disappointed, And they gave me another jersey, you know. So anyway, I retired, and about 5 years after I retired, I go to a Bills game, and here's this guy wearing that jersey because it was one of those mesh jerseys, and it had my name on the back too, so I knew it was the one that they had gotten from the locker room. And so I went up to the guy, and he was with a whole group of other, you know, fans that were out there at the stadium. And he said, I asked him, I said, hey, where'd you get that jersey? And he goes, I used to work for the Bills, and I was in their locker room, and I got this after one of the games. And all of his friends all of a sudden realized who I was, and they said, hey, that's Jeff Nixon. You got his jersey on. And he's like, oh, man, I really like this, you know. And he thought I was like going to take it from him or something. I said, no, wear it with pride, you know. And so I let him go, and then what's interesting is the very next year I go to the stadium. I'm watching the game, and I go down into the tunnel, in the area, the concourse area, and I'm walking around, and here's that same guy, and he's with his same friends again. They must have had season tickets. And he comes up to me, he's got the jersey on, he takes it off and he gives it to me, and he goes, man, I felt bad about the fact that, I didn't give this to you last year, and I just, so here you go. And I was like, man, that was so nice. And it was just, to have that now and as a memento of a probably the best game I ever played as a Bill. I not only had three interceptions, I had a fumble recovery too, so I had four takeaways in the game, and we beat these guys, and we still have the longest losing streak in the NFL to one team, Miami Dolphins. And you had a lot of success against them when you played with the Bills.
It was always a great rivalry, and we'd had great fan support down in Miami. We'd get a few Monday nighters in there, and
so you're living down in Florida now, right?
Yeah, I'm just outside of Sarasota, though. I'm closer to the Bucs than I am to any other team.
So they got some big Bills fans down there?
Yeah, you know what? Bills backers are all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
They're everywhere. My kids forgot I was on the radio. Anyway.
Oh, that's okay. have them, they can talk too.
They sure can. All I have are girls, so it's you want them to talk, we'll never get off the air.
Oh, well, that's funny. Mementos like that. Having, what's crazy though? I intercepted a pass against the Jets. I run it in 50 yards for a touchdown. I spike the ball in the end zone, and I'm like, afterwards I'm thinking, and the ball disappeared. Who knows where it went? They might have picked it up and just kept using it. But I was thinking that might be the only time I ever score a touchdown. And sure enough, it was the only touchdown I ever scored. I was like, I could have kept that ball. Everybody does that nowadays. They keep the football. So I don't know. It was something that you just do at the moment. I just couldn't believe it. I always wanted to spike the football when I scored. So anyway, look, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back. I've got Steve Christy as my guest, and you're listening to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report.
High school to the pros, we cover everything.
Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
The Owen Hodge Show.
Are you ready for some football? Well, here it comes. The Owen Hodge Show is bringing you the funniest hour in sports talk radio. This action-packed show is hosted by the outspoken fullback, Big Hodge, and the knowledgeable defensive back, Odie. This show will focus on the NFL, but touch on all things sports. Owen Hodge will provide you with a true player's perspective that'll give you insight, make you think, and definitely make you laugh. Owen Hodge have accumulated 6 championship rings, so obviously they know things. Check out the Owen Hodge Show at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Network.
The Owen Hodge Show.
I know. Being a college freshman is supposed to be tough, but let me tell you about my schedule this semester. All 18 credits. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I have American Lit at 8:05 a.m., and then I only have 15 minutes to get to my 9:15 Ethics and Value Theory class all the way across campus, then in the afternoon, Calculus 1. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have 2 lectures that go through lunch, Sociology of Families, then Intro to Microbiology. Pre-med. And finally, I have a double lab that ends around 9 p.m. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you.
If a kid will do whatever it takes to get through college, what will you do to send her there? Please support the United Negro College Fund and call 1-800-332-UNCF, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need to bench his ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You're tuned in to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report with Jeff Nixon. It's your turn to get in on today's discussion. Call Jeff now, toll-free, at 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. You can also drop an email to jeffnixon@aol.com. Now, back to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I've got Steve Christie, the former place kicker for the Buffalo Bills from 1992 to 2000, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was, what, eight years?
9 years.
9 years, okay. Hey, we were talking a little bit about that that comeback win against the Houston Oilers, the greatest comeback in the history of the NFL. And then what's really impressive is that after that, you went on to kick the very next game, 5 field goals in the 29-10 win over Miami in the AFC Championship.
Well, Jeff, you got to let me correct you on that because Frank Reich actually played another game.
Oh, that's right. You guys had a game between there, right?
Went to Pittsburgh,
right?
For the Three Rivers.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, there was a game in between there with at Pittsburgh. Yeah,
and Frank was still playing. And as you know, Three Rivers is no place to go. Ever,
oh.
Not to mention that time of the year. So.
You know, Jim Kelly had some terrible performances. I went down to Pittsburgh one time. My wife is from there, and we went to a game, and they killed Jim. You know, and it was just and it must have been bad for him because he's from the Pittsburgh area, but outside of Pittsburgh and East
right.
Brady,
yeah.
And I'm sure he always wanted to play well in front of the people that saw him maybe playing high school football, but. But anyway, going back to what I was saying is that you had 5 field goals in that 29-10 win over the Dolphins for the AFC Championship game, which helped you guys get to your third consecutive Super Bowl. How did it feel, who'd you guys play that year? Was it Dallas? That was the first year you played Dallas, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Really funny, After the Miami game, we're coming out of the tunnel, and John Butler grabs me. I made 5, but I missed one. So John came over and he puts his arm around me. And he says, "Steve, what the heck happened? What? You missed? What happened?" And I was only 23 or 24 at the time, and I took it seriously.
Right. Oh.
What was really neat about that was when we came out of Prior Aviation, when the plane came in. It was probably a mile or so of cars, of people meeting us, and it was 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning by the time we got back, and all the Bills fans sort of lined the street to welcome us back, and that was amazing. I mean, that's one of the things you always remember. You know, you can remember bits and bites out of games, but the fan support was really incredible, and it made the whole thing special.
You know, people ask me what was your greatest thrill playing, football, and I always said it just always made me get goosebumps and stuff was coming down that tunnel, getting ready to enter the stadium, and then you could see these people hanging over the edge of the rails and screaming, and then you come out and there's 80,000 people there. And that was always the thing that got me most pumped up, It wasn't so much I'm playing football. I mean, it was fun to play and it was, exciting and everything else, but it wouldn't be worth a darn if you didn't have anybody out in there in the stands watching you, and it was just, it was an amazing thing. Hey, I've got John Marshall, a caller on the line here. John, are you on the line there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you got a question or a comment for either me or Steve?
Yeah, it's actually for both of you. First of all, I was at the Steeler-Buffalo game before the AFC Championship game that year, and y'all kicked my Steelers behind. So I was at that game, and I remember it, unfortunately, very well. My question, though, is for actually for both of you, because I'm from Newport News, Virginia, so I'm very close to William and Mary, and also the University of Richmond. My dad graduated from the University of Richmond, and I've met Jeff a couple of times back when I was a kid. And my question is this. Do you guys have, are y'all going to have a friendly wager on the William & Mary Richmond game at the end of the year?
That's, you know, I was going to bring that up with Steve in you know, in the next couple of segments. But now that you brought it up, yeah, I think that's a good idea. You know, I mean, I'm up in Buffalo, so, you know, what we'll say, a bucket of wings. What do you got down there in Florida, Steve?
Key lime pie.
Key lime pie? Come on, I don't like key lime. You
get tacos. I don't know. What do you want?
I would like a marlin shipped in ice. You know,
that doesn't equate to a bucket.
It's a, well, how about some mahi mahi? Isn't that dolphin? Is that dolphin?
Yeah, that could
work. So
let me just say this: you guys, Richmond, the Spiders, our rival, are the national champs, national champs.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. When I went there, we were a so-so team, but one of the reasons being is we were in the Southern Conference. We were a Division I school at the time. Now they're Division I, AA or whatever. But we were playing teams. We went independent after my first year, and we were playing North Carolina and Georgia and Wisconsin, and you know, just some big powerhouse here, which was good for me. I mean, I got some notoriety and stuff. But yeah, you know, William and Mary and Richmond. Marshall, how long has that rivalry been going on now?
Well, I know it's the South's oldest rivalry. I believe it's been going on something like 95 years or something like that. I mean, it's incredibly long time. William and Mary, up until about 5 or 6 years ago, I think had won 6 or 7 straight, and then Richmond, I believe, has won 5 of the last 6 or something like that. So it's been kind of a seesaw thing. But Richmond is number one in the country right now, and William and Mary, I believe, is number 4. So it should make for a heck of a game.
Oh,
and it'll be the last game at your old stadium, Jeff, University of Richmond Stadium.
It's interesting. I hear they're doing they're going to vote for like the all-time team, and they're going to invite them to come down there for that game and introduce them at halftime or something like that. So make sure you go online and you vote for Jeff Nixon.
You know what though, Jeff? I'm thinking road trip right now. That may be one heck of a game to go to.
Oh, I'm going to be there. I'm coming down there for that one, yeah, for sure. I got to go. You know, my brother lives in Fredericksburg, so I got a place to stay, and you know, I got friends down in the Richmond area too. You know, so I'll have a blast down there, man. I'm looking forward to that. So one way or the other, whether I make the team or not, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna be down there for it. So hey, if you can make it there, John, where do you live right now?
I live in Newport News, Virginia. So I'm, you know, I'm 15 minutes from Williamsburg and about an hour from Richmond, but I get up to a couple of games a year. And
yeah, well, hook up. Come see if you can find me for that game, because I'm coming to that. I'm going to be there for that game.
Well, I would definitely like to see you. My dad introduced me to you.
How old
at your last home game many years ago against William and Mary.
Yeah, how old were you?
Then he brought me on a trip up to Baltimore to see you when you were with the Bills.
Right.
And so it would be really good to see you again.
Yeah, absolutely. How old were you when you saw that game?
Oh, gee. When I saw the William and Mary game, your final home game, I was 11 years old, and I'm 42 now.
Wow, don't make me feel too old now. Oh, no. Hey, Steve, do you get a chance to go back to William and Mary at all? Have you been back there?
Yeah, I just I was down there a couple months ago, caught up with my old head coach, Jimmy Laycock, who's been there now for, I would think, 30 years anyway.
Yeah, the head coach, Marv Levy, was coached there.
Well, here's a good story. Marv Levy and Lou Holtz coached my head coach. So you want to talk about pretty good pedigree going through there, and maybe that's why Laycock's been there so long. He's just so good, and he's you know, very consistent. But as you know, with schools like ours and 1AA, I think the hardest the biggest obstacle for us is recruiting players, because you know, oddly enough, our guys are supposed to go to class. You know, just like at Richmond, you guys are expected to speed as well, and it's getting harder and harder to get guys in that can play, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? I tell you what, at schools like that, they don't care. If anything, the athletes get treated a little bit tougher there because, I don't know, I'm not sure what it is, but they, you know, scholarship is nice, but, you know, you got to do, you know, right in the classrooms too. And so I learned that early on, boy. They actually had to give me a tutor after my first semester because my grades were just not up to snuff, you know, which was nice. I mean, they supplied a tutor to me. I couldn't believe they would do that, but I definitely needed one.
You and me both.
Yeah. So anyway, hey, John, you still online there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, have you got any other questions or comments on for Steve or myself?
No, sir. It's a pleasure to talk to both of you. Thank you for your time.
All right, well, stay in touch. You know, send me an email at jeffnixon@aol.com and let me know if you're going to be at the game, because I'm definitely going to make plans to be there.
Oh, I'm definitely going to be there. I've already got my ticket, so I'm going to be there.
Good. All right, John, you take care now. Thanks for calling.
You too, guys. Bye-bye.
All righty. Yeah, so it's kind of nice to hear from people that you know, we're fans in a way, you know, and it's amazing. I was at our building. I work here at the Buffalo Employment Training Center, and there was a guy who does construction here, and I didn't know who he was or anything, and he came up to me, he goes, "Are you Jeff Nixon?" And I said, "Yeah," and he says, "When I was in, like, Pop Warner, Pee Wee football, I wore your number 38. You know, you were like my hero and stuff." And I was like, oh, man, that was such an honor to hear somebody say that, you know, that was like, you know, he was emulating me, you know. Because I did the same thing when I was growing up, you know. I mean, I had guys that, you know, that I looked up to. And you know, for somebody to say that, you know. He said he tried to get it when he was in high school, but somebody else had the number, so.
I did that with Daryl Sittler. He was the old captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, my apologies to all the Sabres fans. I am a Sabres fan now, but growing up outside of Toronto, I was a Leafs fan, and Daryl Sittler was the captain back then, center forward, and he was my hero growing up. And it just I've seen him so many times now, and he, you know, he knows what I'm going to say. You're my hero growing up. And you know, and he gets that look on his face, you know, but it's true. It's kind of neat to be able to, and I still think it's an honor to hear it, you know, and for someone like Daryl, who's a class act, you know, it was special for me, and I would like to think it was special for him too, you know.
Yeah, you know that. Yeah, and it's just you know, there's always people in your life that, you know, make a difference in, you know, in the way things could have been. It was interesting when I was in junior high school, you know, I was a pretty decent athlete, and I had a principal there that thought I had potential, you know, and so I go to high school, and for the first couple of years, I don't play football at all, you know, and then I tried out, like, my junior year, and you know, I'm kind of, like, sitting on the sidelines. They're not doing anything with me. I'm basically going to be warming the bench, and the principal from that high school, he had moved up to, or from the junior high school, had moved up to the high school, and he came to the practice, and he goes, like, "Why is Nixon sitting over there? I think he's a pretty good athlete. You should try him at a couple different positions." And I ended up being the quarterback like a week later. You know, I was like, I can't believe I go from, you know, riding the pine to becoming the quarterback. So, all right. So we're gonna take a little break so our sponsors can give us their message. And you're with the Jeff Nixon Sports Report. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Hey, football fans, are you ready for an intelligent discussion about the Buffalo Bills and the National Football League? Are you tired of listening to talk show hosts that have never played football? Instead of answering your questions, they prefer to listen to themselves. And when they don't like what you're saying, they just cut you off. Well, that won't happen on the Jeff Nixon Sports Report. Keep it clean, stay relatively calm and rational, and the discussion will flow well. Join Jeff Nixon Monday afternoons at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Network.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. one day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
School to the pros, we cover everything.
Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
You're tuned in to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report with Jeff Nixon. It's your turn to get in on today's discussion. Call Jeff now, toll-free, at 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. You can also drop an email to jeffnixon at AOL.com. Now, back to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I've got Steve Christie, who played with the Buffalo Bills from 1992 to 2009 years, but a lot of people may not know this. Steve played for a couple other teams afterwards, not only San Diego Chargers, but after that, back to the Toronto Argonauts for, one game?
One game and 1 year with the Giants, too.
Okay, and the Giants, too. I didn't see. Now, that's news. I didn't know that. So.
Well, that was a really fun year back when Tom Coughlin was still doing his old school thing. And at 37 or 38, whatever I was, that was about enough. So after 15 years, the final one being with Tom, I was done. The Toronto thing, though, was Michael Pinball Clemens was the head coach of the Argos, and their kicker had a concussion. And there's a CFL rule that it's 7 or 8 days that you just cannot play. And their schedule kind of bounces around a little bit. It's not always on Sunday or, you know, they'll play any day of the week. Yeah. So I said, look, I'll come in for one game. I'm Canadian. It would be great to play one game for Toronto, and that's all it was. But it was a real thrill, and it was fun to get out there for one last time. And it was in Hamilton. That's the town. I was born in Hamilton, so it kind of meant a lot for a lot of different reasons. But it was certainly different than the NFL, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's got to be a little bit strange. The field's a lot longer. I think it's a little wider, too, isn't it?
It's wider. It's what I played on in high school, but, of course, it had been quite a few years since I had been on a field like that South, you know.
Hey, I like watching Canadian football. It's kind of, I mean, I love the fact that these guys can go in motion and go toward the line of scrimmage before the play, man. That's pretty intense. I mean, that's what they do in arena football too, and it kind of spices up the game a little bit. You know, you don't know, and I think you can have more than one you can have like two people in motion.
Yeah, and it's because you know you only have three downs, so I mean that's to make every play mean something. Whereas sometimes in the NFL with the four downs, teams get caught and running off tackle every, first and second down. Whereas in CFL, you got to get it done early or you're punting. So
you got two tries and punt, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So you really have to make it effective. And I think with the guys in motion, it does put linebackers and the secondary at a little bit of a disadvantage.
Oh, sure, man. You're trying to cover a guy that's already going full speed.
Exactly.
Coming at you, and I don't know. I would imagine they do maybe a little bit more zone coverage.
Yeah, you have to, especially with the size of the field. Now, there's one more player. You get an extra player out there, but
still,
they throw it around. You remember when Flutie was up there, if it wasn't on, Doug would run, just like he did in Buffalo, except he had more room to run up there, and he was just incredible. The CFL game really suited him up there because of with the motion and just the fact that you would throw a lot, and if it wasn't on, he had the ability to make use of all that field and make positive yardage.
Yeah, I felt bad for Doug Flutie. You know, he came here to Buffalo, and I tell you what, it just created a ton of excitement here that we were getting this guy. And then, you know, we had J.P. Lossman was, the quarterback at the time. And, so he ended up getting in, though, and he started playing. I think he played the game – that maybe put us in the playoffs or something. He had a great game, and then, you know.
Oh, Rob Johnson, Rob Johnson.
Rob Johnson, I'm sorry, yeah. I'm saying JP. Rob Johnson, yeah. So those two can be used interchangeably, though.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm just kidding. It's not nice to say, but they remind me almost the same type of style and player and stuff. But
demeanor, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, so... But, you know, he played really well in the game before the playoffs, and then when the playoffs came around, Rob was healthy, and they decided to play him. He had a good game, don't get me wrong, and we should have won. It was that game against the Tennessee Titans where they did right. The miracle throwback and stuff. But
oh, yeah.
It would have been fun to see what Flutie would have done if they had just stuck with him, you know. But I understand the coaches, you know. I mean, you know, Rob Johnson was the one that brought you to the dance, so you got to dance with him or whatever, you know. But I always feel that, you know, sometimes you go with the kid that's on fire, you know, and he was on fire, you know, so.
Yeah, you know, and I was, you mentioned San Diego before. I was out there with, John Butler got me out there, and then right. Flutie was already there, and John Holosek, who was a linebacker with the Bills, was there, and Marcellus Wiley,
Wiley, I remember Marcellus, yeah. He's,
and half of the scouting department were all ex-Bill guys, and, you know, the
it must have been
A.J.
Nice,
Smith was up there. We had a bunch of guys out there. But, yeah. But you know, Doug, because they had Drew Brees in there, Doug was back on the bench again. So he never yeah. really got an opportunity to play
right.
that much after that season where we lost in the Music City Miracle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that was unfortunate. And we haven't been to the playoffs since I think 2000 now. It's going on 8 years. We've been 7-9 here in Buffalo for three straight years. What are your impressions of the team right now? What do you see that they, you know, maybe are lacking in? You know, they just played New Orleans, lost 27-7 or something like that. And they, you know, I was at the game. I saw it. And I felt bad for the guys because I know that, you know, I know everybody's trying as hard as they can. You know,
right.
But they're just making too many, you know, just those little bit of, they had like 11 or 12 penalties on them. You know, it's tough to win when you're starting your drive and it's, you know, first and 15 or first and 20, you know,
that
makes it tough. And they didn't get very good field position during the day too. I got to give it to New Orleans. Their special teams played better than ours did, you know?
Yeah. And oddly enough, Bobby April was there in New Orleans for quite a few years.
Oh, is that right? That's he was down there. Okay. I love Bobby April, man. What an enthusiastic guy, you know. I mean, he's the kind of guy that you want, getting the guys fired up. I mean, it's not easy to get players because I remember when I played, it was like no one wanted to be on special teams unless they knew their job depended on it. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Like Mark Pike and, you know, guys like that. It was like, man, if I make this team, you know, this is what I got to do. I got to go down and run, you know, 50 yards and smash into these guys in the wedge, you know.
Right, right.
You know, so, but, you know, for me, man, I hated that, you know, because especially if you're a starter and then you got to stay out there for the punts and you got to stay because it's just, it wears you out, you know.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work to get it set up. It's a lot of work to get the right personnel on your return teams and your coverage teams. It's a lot. And then if you're playing, like you said, if you're starting somewhere else, you know, you're going to have to have the legs to do it. It's not easy.
Oh, yeah. You know, and it's you know, the NFL is over the years has gotten much more specialized. So it's you know, they're able to find guys that, you know, can, you know, that are maybe not starters that are on those teams, you know, and it's but you know, there are guys that start that have to fill in there too. But it was sad because I think the game that they played this past Sunday here in Buffalo against New Orleans hinged on a special teams play because it seemed like everything started to go downhill after Roscoe Parrish caught this punt, and then he made a beautiful juke. You know, the guy that was coming down, you know, it looked like he had him beaten. He was getting ready to head upfield, maybe get 20, 30 yards, and the guy hit the ball as he was going by, and it popped out, and the same guy recovered it. And it was just like, it seemed like everything started to go down. Because, you know, so, you know, special teams, you know, the teams that really concentrate heavily on that, you know, they say that you can win like three or four games a year just on special teams alone.
Yeah, when Bruce DeHaven was there, and obviously with the support of especially Marv Levy, we honestly believe that. And, you know, guys with, like you said, Pike and Tasker and a bunch of other guys that really committed to special teams as well as whatever their backup role may have been at the time.
Right.
But we felt that it wasn't just, and I'm not referring to games that we won on a field goal. I'm talking about, you know, Chris Moore and our kickoff coverage units, our punting teams, you know, just the fact that we are going to change field position. We are going to win that battle. And, you know, it affects where the defense starts. It affects where your offense starts. And we honestly believe that we would affect the outcome, you know, in a lot of the games, but certainly be the deciding factor in about three of them, like you said. And that makes a difference, as you know, as whether you're getting in the playoffs or not.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I tell you what, though, Buffalo has been blessed with a long string of good kickers like yourself. You know, we had, when I was playing, we had a pretty good kicker. He got us to the playoffs, Nick Mickemeyer. You had Scott Norwood, yourself, Ryan Lindell. You know, I mean, these guys, you guys have done a, I mean, it's the history's been pretty good as far as our kickers. We haven't had, like, bad kickers over the past 20 years, you know?
Well, we have. They were in between myself and Ryan. That's why we're not talking about them.
Yeah,
but,
that's true.
Ryan's been solid. Brian Mormon's been, you know, he's been excellent as well. And it takes a different kind of a guy to do it up there because, you know, the winds, the weather, you're not home, you're not in Florida, you're probably somewhere. I mean, Chris Moore and I both had opportunities to leave, and we decided, you know what, I don't think it's, even though it's going to be easier somewhere else, we just didn't want to go. We were so used to dealing with it all, you know, and I look at my stats, and I say, yeah, they'd be a lot better if I stayed in Tampa, but
yep.
I wouldn't have made any, you know, who knows. Yeah, it turned out that Tampa ended up winning a Super Bowl with Dungy, or actually with Gruden, with Dungy's team. But you never know. And at the time, during our career, we felt that it was more important to stay loyal to Buffalo and the team than it was to, you know, improve our stats. And I think, you know, Mormon and Lindell will probably have to cross that bridge, you know, in their careers. Do you stay in Buffalo or do you go down in the dome or possibly a better place to kick but may not be a better place for your family? So
right. And, you know, it's interesting you say that because a lot of fans think it's all about the money. You know, I want to leave Buffalo because I want to get more money here. It's nice to know that, you know, there's guys like yourself and others that, you know, really like, you know, staying where you're at because maybe you like the team and your coaches and the community or whatever. So you don't hear that a lot from guys lately. You know, it seems like it's all about the money, the almighty dollar, and, you know, where can I make this? And I don't care where I go, to be quite honest with you, just as long as I'm getting better money.
Well, I think part of it, when I left Tampa, though, it was kind of a double hit. It was a combination. It was more money, but also I was going into a team that was still really hot. I mean,
yeah,
they had come off that disappointing loss against the Redskins, but there was so much talent up there in Buffalo. And I grew up on down the road off the QEW. I mean, I knew all about what the Bills were doing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's a situation where, you know, if people, anybody in Tampa that thinks I left for the money, you got to be kidding me.
Absolutely.
Not exactly.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back for our final segment. You're listening to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report. We'll be back in just a moment. I'll go back up and get more
back up. Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
Hey, football fans, are you ready for an intelligent discussion about the Buffalo Bills and the National Football League? Are you tired of listening to talk show hosts that have never played football? Instead of answering your questions, they prefer to listen to themselves. And when they don't like what you're saying, they just cut you off. Well, that won't happen on the Jeff Nixon Sports Report. Keep it clean, stay relatively calm and rational, and the discussion will flow well. Join Jeff Nixon Monday afternoons at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Network.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw six war canoes drawn upon the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky, the eaters of men. cannibals. Firelight glistened on their oiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. Four figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
I'm Ed Hanway, Chairman and CEO of Cigna Corporation. In America today, 1 in 8 babies is born prematurely, and more newborns die from premature birth than any other cause. Solutions are within our grasp. Together with the March of Dimes, we can find the causes of premature birth. It's time for us to do more to help moms have healthy, full-term babies. Join the March of Dimes and moms across America. Sign the petition for preemies at marchofdimes.com/petition.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need to bitch his ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You're tuned in to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report with Jeff Nixon. It's your turn to get in on today's discussion. Call Jeff now, toll free, at 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. You can also drop an email to jeffnixon@aol.com. Now, back to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I've got Steve Christie with me, and we were talking about his career. He played for the Bills actually with Tampa for a couple years, then played with the Bills from 1992 to 2000, from 2001 to 2003. He was with the San Diego Chargers, also played with the New York Giants, and just a one-day stint with the Toronto Argonauts, too. So anyway, what are you up to in life right now, Steve? What kind of work do you do?
Well, I joined forces with my agent, Gil Scott. He's in the sports management industry as an agent, and he calls me director of player development. What I do is I help him recruit players out of college, and I help him with the players that he has, whether they have a job or they don't. I can help them try to get into a workout or, try to give these guys some advice from my experience from playing, to really extend their career and, get them through the tough times. As it's not always easy. The life of the NFL brings a lot of things to you, and it's not just what you see on the field. There's a lot of things that, you always need a little bit of advice along the way.
Oh, absolutely. I remember when I came into the NFL, we didn't have anything like that. At least now they give them a mandatory rookie symposium where these guys have to go and they have to at least, stay for 3 or 4 days or something at some place where they provide clinics on, how to manage money, how to deal with the public, investments and things of that nature. So it's good that they developed that and that you are worried. Now, Gil Scott, does he represent some players in the NFL right now?
He has a number of players in the NFL, a lot of players in the CFL, and he also represents NHL coaches. And that's, I'm just going to say this quickly, NHL has a rule that you can either represent players or coaches, not both. And I kind of think that might be an interesting rule for the NFL to look at.
Oh, absolutely. There's some guys right now that are representing both, So, yeah, that's an interesting idea. I think it makes sense. I always was a little bit upset with the fact that that the guy that was the player agent for a lot of players was also representing Gene Upshaw, was the head of the NFL Players Association. I forget what's his name? Condon.
Condon.
Yeah, Tom Condon. Now he's with probably one of the largest player agent firms in the country right now. But that's a cutthroat business. As I mentioned during the break, that I saw the movie Jerry Maguire, and it just dissuaded me from ever, becoming a player agent. But I like the National Football League Players Association did a service to the players by making sure that agents had certification. So you have to go for certification, and anybody else that wants to become a player agent, not you particularly, but your, you know, Gil Scott, the guy that that hires you, which is a good thing, you know, because back in my day, there were a lot of ruthless agents. You know, they could charge you just about anything they wanted, 5% of your contract, 10%. There was no limit to it, you know, and a lot of players got sucked into it. And you know, my agent, he got 5% of not just my signing bonus, but 5% of my contract and 5% of any incentives that I earn. And it was like, this is insane. You know, now they've limited that to 3% of a player's contract in the NFL. I'm not sure what it is up in Canada, if they have any limitations on the amount of money that...
Yeah, it's pretty similar. And plus, the contracts up in Canada are certainly nothing like what you get in the NFL. So,
oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, it's... In Gil's case, he's got a number of players from the CFL, and that's how you make your money up there, is more by having the numbers, because you're not going to get, you know, a barn-burning contract up there unless you're, you know, someone like Doug Flutie. But the way the economy is and the way the CFL has been lately, you know, again, you know, it's more like getting a good bit of your income comes from the number of players that you have, not just from a few contracts.
Well, yeah, that's important to, you know, have a big stable, you know.
Yeah, in that case, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and players nowadays, I mean, if you can land a couple first-rounders in the NFL and you don't have a big, you know, agency, you can do quite well. I mean, if you're getting 3% of a, let's say, a bonus for $20 million, and then you're getting a piece of the salary too, that can last a little bit of time. You know, it's not a bad business to get into nowadays. You know,
it's not bad. I think the hardest part, Jeff, is there is a lot of competition. There are a number of really, really good agents with a lot of experience, and I think you know, Gil's been in the business for 30 years, and I've played for 15 years, and you know, I think it's a good combination where I think we've been on both sides of the ball, and you know, I think we'll be able to help guys, and it's not just about, you know, nickel and diming these teams to get more money. It's a question of getting the player in the right place at the right price so that everyone's happy and fair. And,
right.
And like I said before, trying to keep these guys in, you know, and then ultimately at the end of the day have something left over so that they can make the transition from the NFL into the real world, because as we know, you don't get to play forever, and even when you're 21 and 22 or whatever, or even later on in life, you seem to think you're going to play forever, but it does come to an end.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, Steve. I've been a pretty outspoken critic of the NFL Players Association, because, you know, a lot of retired players, particularly from, you know, from my era, you know, we didn't have the benefits that a lot of the current guys get. I mean, basically all we got was a salary and then a ticket out the door. You know, now players, they have a severance pay, they've got an annuity plan, they've got a second career savings plan, they've got a health 5 years of free medical after they leave, they've got a health reimbursement account, they got a tremendous disability program. I mean, it's sad what's happened to a lot of retired players. Conrad Dobler, he couldn't make the golf tournament because he is having his 23rd surgery on his knees. And he's had 7 knee replacements. And while he was in the hospital for this last one, he contracted MRSA. It's a very deadly staph infection. And so they had to go in and clean out the suture. And it was just, I feel, now he's someone who's never collected a penny of disability from the NFL because they have stonewalled him. I mean, somebody like that nowadays. And I played with Conrad, and Conrad was like, his knees were extremely bad when he was with the Bills. And I, you know, so there's got to be some reform that needs to take place at the National Football League Players Association. They're not going to be able to get it done without the cooperation of the owners, too. You know, the thing that I've been pushing for, too, is better pensions. You know, the guys that played from like 1983 back, our per credited season is like $250 per credit season, as compared to, you know, players, you know, from 1990, I think it's 3 or 5 on, that are getting like $475 per credited season. And, you know, we were hoping that, you know, instead of, you know, pumping up all these other benefits that they keep giving to the active players, that they could maybe go back and try and, you know, balance the playing field and give some of the retired players a bigger piece of the pension pie. So, you know, those are things that are going to be negotiated in this next collective bargain agreement, which, you know, is going to be a tough one. You know, the owners are threatening lockout, and it'll be very interesting to see what happens with that. But, Steve, we're getting real close to the end of the show here. You know, I'd love to have you back on here, and when you get back up to Buffalo, man, you got to make sure you stop by the stadium and say hi. I always go to all the home games, and you know, and if I'm ever down in Florida, which I will be, by the way, in October, I have a timeshare down there in Orlando. So
nice.
Yeah, I got to shoot down for that. But man, it's been great having you on the show. We've only got about 30 seconds left here. Anything you want to say to the fans in Buffalo?
Oh, just that you know, it was incredible to play there, and we still have a place in Niagara on the Lake. So even though we've moved down here, we haven't left completely. And
you got a place on Niagara on the Lake?
Yeah, my wife's up there right now, and it's a really neat part of the world for us. It's so close to Buffalo, but it's still, you know, it's kind of tucked away there. It's nice and quiet, but you know, we've never left. We never will. And the Bills fans have been fantastic.
Hey, that's super. Chris, it's been great having you. Chris, what am I saying? Steve Christie has been my guest today. Thank you for joining us on the Sports Report. Join us next Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll see you then. Make all my boys say I'm too far gone.
Thanks again for participating in an engaging discussion of football on the Jeff Nixon Sports Report with former Buffalo Bill Jeff Nixon. Join us again next Monday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 Pacific on the Voice America Sports Network. In the house of pain.